You know, some people enjoy composing their own music, chord by chord, and others are happiest when they come across that one perfect song. Work is not a lot different than that. Whether you prefer building your own workflow or using a pre-made template, with Monday.com, you and the team can work in a way that's comfortable for everyone. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com and build your own amazing workflow, or find an awesome template. No judgment.
The booming of the mountain and the shaking of the earth. An omen, perhaps. We have been warned. The billowing gray cloud high in the sky is sure to bring about certain death. Everyone was fleeing the city with everything they could carry. Well, not everyone. And those who weren't would only live long enough to regret it. They would forever be entombed where they stood alongside their children when the mountain let out a final breath. Welcome to Destination Terror, your passport to the scariest places in the world. From haunted hotels to locations of unexplained creature sightings. And now, places that we only visit in our imagination. We will travel to places that will provide excitement, adventure, and horror. Today we are visiting Pompeii, an ancient Roman city near modern Naples, Italy, which was famously buried under volcanic ash and pumice in the eruption of Mount Vesuvius in AD 79. It's a horrifying destination today, due to the well-preserved ruins that offer a haunting glimpse into the lives of its inhabitants frozen in time by the catastrophic event. So if you're into travel and all things scary, listen close, and you might just discover your next exciting adventure destination. But hopefully, not your final destination. Destination Terror is an EerieCast original podcast, hosted by me, Carmen Carrion. If you would like to send us a suggestion or submit a story with your own experience, you can email them to carmencarrion@gmail.com. That is carmencarrion@gmail.com. Or follow me on Twitter at Carmen Carrion. If you enjoy the show, please follow and rate Destination Terror on Spotify and Apple Podcasts to help us grow. Also, check out EerieCast.com for more scary podcasts, such as Freaky Folklore, the podcast where together we explore horrifying legends across the world and tell terrifying tales of monsters both ancient and modern. The winter has been harsh. Too harsh. Our family's land used to stretch as far as the eye could see in every direction around our lavish villa. But the years have been too hard, and after my father died a few summers ago, it all just went to hell. It had been an impossible decision I had to make, but the men who came and offered to buy our failing land had made the offer sound too good. I could take my family and rebuild somewhere else. I wasn't like my father, or his father before him. I wasn't a farmer. Though the farm had started to fail long before it was my sole responsibility, I couldn't help but take on all the blame. So I sold it all and packed the kids and we set off in our wagon, without rations. We'd make it to Rome in a few weeks, and with the money from the land, we'd be just fine. It was our fourth night traveling when a group of men with swords rode up on their horses and took everything we had of value. They even took the damn horses. I found myself wholly unprepared for this scenario and trying to figure out how I would get my family the rest of the way to Rome with no food, no money, no shelter, no anything. By some miracle, we survived another night in the frigid temperatures. I was able to get a fire started to keep us warm. Well, warm enough anyway. By morning, I hadn't been able to rest much. I knew I had to find food for the children and my wife. Their bodies were weak from travel, and I knew they wouldn't last long without food in their bellies. I restoked the fire and kissed my wife on the forehead. "Keep the fire going," There's plenty of wood. I'm going to try and find something for the children to eat." She smiled grimly but nodded. By some stroke of luck, I managed to catch a few rabbits. It was enough to put a good amount in everyone's belly. I saw smoke while I was out hunting. There were many fires, judging by the amount of smoke. "I think we should head that way to see if they can offer any help," I told Maria. She sighed and said, "Do you think that's wise, Al? We haven't had the best experience with people out here." "I'm desperate enough to try, dear. We still have a few days before we reach Rome. Longer with the children so tired and cranky. We need a good night's sleep and full bellies if we hope to make it." "I know. We just need to be careful, that's all. I don't trust anyone out here. It's been a hard winter. And these poor souls are desperate, much like we are." We walked for a couple of hours in the direction of the smoke. The closer we got, we could hear movement, a lot of movement. We topped the small hill that had obscured the fires and the people that kept them stoked. Maria sighed a breath of relief. It was a whole town. The map they had been following before it was taken had been crude and missing most things. They had just a general direction to head to reach Rome. "Well, my dear, it's not Rome, but this will do for tonight." The town was a welcoming sight for my family. The flickering fires cast dancing shadows on the faces of the townspeople, who gathered around them, curious about the newcomers. We were greeted cautiously, but with a hint of sympathy in the eyes of those who understood the harsh realities of winter. A kind older man approached me, sensing the desperation and hunger in our eyes. "You look like you've had a rough journey, friend." "My name is Giovanni. What brings you to our humble town?" I hesitated, unsure if sharing our story would make us easy prey. But we had nothing left to lose. So I relented, and then began to share the heartbreaking tale of our journey. The loss of our land, the robbery, and the struggle to survive. Giovanni listened intently, nodding in understanding. "We just need a place to rest and recover. Just enough to get us to Rome," I said, and I could tell the man was contemplating his next sentence when he offered a suggestion. "There's work to be found at the excavation site near Pompeii. Archaeologists are always in need of strong hands, especially during these harsh times. It doesn't pay much, but it will do. But be warned. Some say the place has a way of playing tricks on a man's mind. Keep your wits about you." After offering me this bit of information, Giovanni pointed me in the direction of the dig site. I was desperate for any opportunity to provide for my family. I decided to heed Giovanni's advice. I traded the only possessions I had left of any value, a hunting knife that had been passed down from my father, and the small gold wedding band that Maria had managed to hide from the thieves. It didn't get us much, but it secured a place to rest for Maria and the children, even managed to get each of them a small meal. After everyone was settled, I headed towards the excavation site, where faint glimmers of lamplights and the distant sounds of shovels against earth filled the night air. As I approached the site, I felt a chill in the air that had nothing to do with the cold. The flickering lamplights cast eerie shadows, and the ruins appeared like ghostly remnants beneath the pale moonlight. The dig site had a mystic atmosphere, with the skeletal structures frozen in time, waiting to reveal their secrets. I had never seen anything quite like this before. The site was teeming with men moving about in a hurry. I wasn't sure where I'd find the man that Giovanni had told me to find and ask for work, but I figured I'd just ask around. Everyone looked like they were in a panic for whatever reason, and they were shouting at one another. I could see the glow of a larger tent in the distance, and figured that would be a good place to look. This place felt strange. Though it was full of men, it felt cold and lifeless. I was right about the tent. I found a man there who gave me quite the task. There was word of a storm blowing in, the reason for all the mayhem. They were trying to cover their newest dig. They had found a home, mostly still intact, and they didn't want their work ruined. And since I had no experience taking care of those sorts of things, the man gave me a shovel and showed me to a cart. "It needs to be emptied and reloaded. We don't usually work in the dark like this, but we have to get ahead of this storm. Get as much moved as you can. When you can't go anymore, come find me. My name is Juan." I thanked Juan for the opportunity and got to work. I was no stranger to a shovel. I'd been a farmer after all. I had managed to empty and refill the cart several times over the last few hours. It was getting quite late, and the men had slowed their movements around the site. But I wasn't ready to give in just yet. I had one more cart in me. As I threw the last of my dirt onto the pile I'd managed to build up, cold wind swept over me, one that pierced the very center of my bones. It engulfed me in a fierce gust, bringing with it the sound of distant cheers. I wondered if the men had found something. But the sound, it didn't come from their direction. It came from the darkness. It was the middle of the night, and my exhaustion must be getting to me. That's when I saw a small boy walking towards me. Every hair on my body stood on end, and I couldn't put my finger on it. He carried no lantern, and the light of the fire could not reach him, but yet I could still see him. He appeared gray from head to toe, wearing only a small wrap around his waist. It was freezing out here. The boy was going to freeze to death. "Hey, kid, what are you doing out here? It's too cold. Here, I have a cover you can use." I turned to grab my cover to offer it to the boy. But when I turned back, he was gone. He had just vanished. I looked around for him for longer than I probably should have, before I relented and pushed the cart back to the hole. I found Juan, and he handed me a few coins. "Come back in the morning. There will be more work if you're interested." "I'll be back. Hey, Juan, do you have kids working out here?" "There was a young boy over by the cart earlier. I tried to offer him my blanket, but he vanished." Juan sighed and looked down at the ground before he said, "No, we don't have any kids out here. But this place is said to be haunted by the ones that were buried here. My men see and hear a lot of strange things while they're digging. Legend has it, the souls here never rest." Pompeii, a bustling Roman city situated near modern-day Naples, Italy, thrived as a vibrant and prosperous community before the catastrophic eruption of Mount Vesuvius in 79 AD. Founded around the 7th or 6th century BC, Pompeii evolved into a significant trade hub and a resort destination for affluent Romans. The city boasted impressive architecture, sophisticated infrastructure, and a diverse population engaged in commerce, arts, and daily life. The urban layout included grand villas, public baths, an amphitheater, and a marketplace. Lavish frescoes adorned the walls of opulent residences, showcasing the wealth and cultural sophistication of the inhabitants. The streets were lined with shops, taverns, and eateries, reflecting the bustling commercial activities of the city. Pompeii was a testament to Roman engineering prowess, featuring an advanced aqueduct system that supplied water to public fountains and private homes. The populace of Pompeii reveled in social and recreational activities, attending performances at the amphitheater, enjoying communal baths, and participating in religious ceremonies at temples scattered throughout the city. The prosperous and vibrant life in Pompeii came to an abrupt and tragic halt with the eruption of Mount Vesuvius. The eruption in 79 AD stands as one of the most catastrophic events in ancient history, forever encapsulating the city of Pompeii in a moment frozen by ash and tragedy. The eruption began in the early morning or late evening of October or November 79 AD. The first phase witnessed a relentless rain of pumice for approximately 18 hours. This initially allowed many inhabitants to escape the city. Historical records indicate that residents had time to gather their belongings, as evidenced by the recovery of valuable items like jewelry, coins, and silverware alongside skeletons. As the eruption progressed, pyroclastic flows marked the beginning of the end for Pompeii. These flows were comprised of high-speed, dense, and scorching ash clouds. They began near Mount Vesuvius, racing down the slopes with unparalleled force. The destructive power of pyroclastic flows is best understood by their ability to knock down or partially destroy any structures in their path. The remaining population faced incineration or suffocation as the landscape, including the coastline, underwent a dramatic transformation. By the evening of the second day, the eruption had wreaked havoc on Pompeii. The city was covered in multiple layers of tephra, reaching depths of up to 6 meters, 19.7 feet. The intense heat emitted by pyroclastic flows proved fatal for those within a 10-kilometer, 6-mile radius from the event. Even individuals seeking refuge within buildings were not spared, as exposure to temperatures exceeding 250 degrees Celsius, 480 degrees Fahrenheit, caused instant death. The ruins of Pompeii revealed that some buildings collapsed due to seismic activity during the eruption, contributing to the tragic fate of their occupants. Pliny the Younger, who observed the eruption from across the Bay of Naples at Misenum, provided a first-hand account of the events. While his detailed narrative, written approximately 27 or 28 years after the eruption, remains a crucial historical source, it also emphasizes the heroic yet tragic efforts of his uncle, Pliny the Elder. As the admiral of the fleet, Pliny the Elder perished while attempting to rescue stranded victims. The importance of Pliny the Younger's account is underscored by the recognition of similar volcanic events as Plinian. The exact date of the eruption has been a subject of debate, with conflicting historical accounts. While it was traditionally believed to be an August event, evidence in 2022 suggested a date of the 24th or 25th of October. Rediscovery of Pompeii occurred centuries later in 1592, when architect Domenico Fontana stumbled upon ancient walls while digging an aqueduct. However, full-scale excavations did not commence until the 18th century, revealing the haunting remnants of a once-thriving city. Modern archaeology, employing multidisciplinary studies, numerical simulations, and experiments, has provided valuable insights into the eruption's aftermath. The revelation that heat, rather than ash suffocation, was the primary cause of death reshaped our understanding of the tragedy. Plaster casts of voids left by decomposed bodies, introduced by Giuseppe Fiorelli in the 19th century, offered hauntingly realistic glimpses into the final moments of Pompeii's inhabitants. The eruption of Mount Vesuvius and the subsequent tragedy that befell Pompeii remain a poignant chapter in human history, reminding us of the unpredictable forces of nature and the fragility of civilization in the face of such catastrophic events. The discovery and archaeological exploration of Pompeii spanned centuries, unveiling crucial insights into the ancient Roman life. Initially buried and preserved by the catastrophic eruption of Mount Vesuvius, Pompeii's location faded from memory over time. In 1592, architect Domenico Fontana accidentally unearthed ancient walls adorned with paintings and inscriptions while digging an underground aqueduct. Keeping the finding confidential, rediscovery gained momentum in 1738, when workers excavating for a summer palace rediscovered the nearby Herculaneum. The pivotal phase of Pompeii's excavation commenced in 1748, superheaded by the Spanish military engineer, Roque Joaquin de Alcubierre. Carl Weber initiated scientific excavations in 1764, followed by Francisco La Vega and Pietro. The French occupation from 1799 to 1815 expedited the process with up to 700 workers. Giuseppe Fiorelli, in 1863, introduced scientific documentation and the innovative plaster casting technique to preserve decomposed bodies' forms. Amedeo Maiuri's 20th century excavations delved into older layers, and the 1950s uncovered the southern area. The Great Pompeii Project, initiated in 2012, addresses conservation challenges. Recent discoveries, such as harnessed horses in 2018, remains of two individuals in 2020, a Thermopolium in December 2020, and a ceremonial chariot in January 2021, continue to enrich our understanding of Pompeii. Despite facing conservation challenges, ongoing efforts, including the Great Pompeii Project, aim to stabilize and protect this invaluable window into ancient Roman history. The centuries spent digging, and it's like we've just begun to scratch the surface. The historical narrative of Pompeii, chronicling the once thriving civilization buried beneath layers of ash, has not only gripped the pages of history books, but has also woven itself into the fabric of collective imagination. Pompeii turned into a haunting mass grave by the eruption of Mount Vesuvius, encapsulates the tragic demise of a populace entombed in their homes, with their possessions. As history cautions against disturbing the resting place of the deceased, Pompeii, over the centuries, has witnessed the intrusion of both thieves and grave robbers, eager to exploit the city's buried treasures. However, the repercussions extend beyond illegal activities. The excavation and relocation of artifacts to museums have, according to enduring legends, invoked a peculiar kind of curse upon those who have come into contact with these relics. The mysterious and unsettling tales surrounding these artifacts contribute to the complex legacy of Pompeii. One of the most famous legends associated with stolen artifacts and a curse from Pompeii revolves around the House of the Veti, a well-preserved ancient Roman dwelling. The house, believed to belong to two freedmen, Aulu Vettius Conviva and Aulu Vettius Restitius, is known for its intricate frescoes and detailed architecture. According to the legend, in the 20th century, a series of murals depicting scenes from daily life in Pompeii were stolen from the House of the Veti. The stolen frescoes supposedly included depictions of banquets, mythological figures, and everyday activities of the Pompeian residents. It is said that those who were involved in the theft or acquisition of these frescoes experienced a series of misfortunes and tragedies. The legend suggests that a curse was placed upon the stolen artifacts to avenge the disturbance of the ancient site. Another legend associated with a supposed curse from Pompeii involves a mosaic known as the Cave of Canaan, or Beware of the Dog. This mosaic was believed to have been part of the entrance of a house in Pompeii, and features a chained dog and the warning, Cave Canaan, inscribed below. As the legend goes, that a piece of this mosaic was taken from Pompeii, and subsequently, misfortune befell the thief. Allegedly, the person who stole the mosaic suffered from a series of setbacks and tragedies, all attributed to the curse associated with the stolen artifact. One intriguing legend surrounding another curse from Pompeii involves the theft of a specific artifact, a small bronze statue known as the Pompeii Lakshmi. This statue depicting the Hindu goddess Lakshmi was discovered in the ruins of Pompeii and became part of the city's diverse collection of artifacts. According to the legend, in the early 20th century, a British museum acquired the Pompeii Lakshmi, and shortly thereafter, a series of misfortunes befell those associated with the artifact. Some versions of the story claim that illness, financial ruin, and even untimely deaths affected those who possessed or dealt with the statue. Modern-day Pompeii, with its haunting remnants frozen in time, casts an eerie silence over the visitors who wander through its ancient streets. The archaeological site, once a bustling Roman city, now stands as a poignant reminder of the catastrophic events that unfolded in 79 AD. The preserved ruins evoke a sense of both awe and solemnity, transporting visitors back to a bygone era, abruptly interrupted by the fury of Mount Vesuvius. As daylight fades, the shadows play tricks among the stone structures, contributing to an atmosphere of quiet melancholy. The vacant streets, once teeming with life, now echo only footsteps and whispers of the past. The ghostly outlines of buildings and courtyards create an otherworldly ambience, intensified by the absence of the vibrant daily activities that once animated these spaces. Visitors often describe an inexplicable sense of connection with the past, as if the echoes of ancient lives reverberate through the silent stones. The plaster casts of those caught in the throes of the eruption, displayed in grim poses of fear and despair, add a chilling layer to the experience. The remnants of daily life, the charred wooden beams to petrified loaves of bread, serve as tangible relics frozen in time. The eerie silence of Pompeii, broken only by the occasional footsteps or rustle of leaves, invites contemplation and reflection. It's as if the city itself is whispering stories of tragedy and resilience to those who are willing to listen. This peculiar stillness, combined with the knowledge of the catastrophic end that befell its inhabitants, can send shivers down the spines of even the most stoic visitors. In the twilight hours when the crowds thin and the ruins are bathed in the soft glow of lamplights, the sense of solitude intensifies. The echoes of Pompeii's history resonate in the quietude, leaving an indelible impression on those who dare to venture into its silent embrace. While Pompeii is primarily known for its archaeological significance, some visitors and locals have reported supernatural experiences, adding a layer of mystery to the ancient site. Accounts of paranormal encounters include sightings, strange sounds, and unexplained phenomena. Many people claim to have seen ghostly apparitions wandering through the ruins, especially around the areas where the plaster casts of the eruption victims are displayed. Some describe encounters with shadowy figures or fleeting glimpses of individuals dressed in ancient Roman attire. These spectral sightings often coincide with a palpable drop in temperature, creating an eerie atmosphere that lingers in certain corners of the site. Visitors have reported hearing whispers or faint cries, as if the echoes of the past are still reverberating through the stone structures. The silence of Pompeii, especially during quiet moments, seems to amplify these mysterious sounds, leaving some visitors with an uncanny feeling of being surrounded by unseen entities. Certain locations within Pompeii are said to be more prone to paranormal activity. The House of Vetti, known for its opulent frescoes, has garnered a reputation for strange occurrences. Visitors and staff members have shared stories of inexplicable footsteps, doors creaking open on their own, and an overall sense of being watched. The ancient amphitheater in Pompeii has also been linked to supernatural accounts. Some visitors claim to have heard phantom cheers, as if the echoes of gladiatorial contests and theatrical performances still resonate in the air.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
I found no comfort when I finally laid my head down to rest next to Maria. The sound the wind had carried kept echoing in my ear, and the small boy, I couldn't stop thinking about him. Not even my dreams relented to their presence. I could see the boy much clearer. His skin was so gray it looked like pure ash, and his eyes were black as night, but fluid like a river. The frigid air had become heated, so hot it was hard to breathe. I found myself gasping for air, all while the boy's black eyes followed my every movement. The horror sank in. I was burning alive. I looked back at the boy, opening my mouth to scream, but no sound came out. I hit the ground, my knees cracking. My skin started to bubble and melt to the ground, leaving nothing but bones. The boy just kept those black eyes fixed on me, never faltering. His eyes shifted to molten red, and he opened his mouth. The words fell out and echoed all around me. Only it wasn't the voice of a small boy. It was the thundering sound of a god that left his tongue. "You will share my fate, unless you return what you have taken." I jerked up in bed so fast, Maria yelped next to me. I was pouring sweat all over my body, and my skin was hot to the touch. I was breathing so hard, my chest felt like it would cave in. "What's wrong? Al, are you okay?" Maria kept fussing over my state. I'm fine. Just a dream. It was just a dream." I repeated it a few more times, not sure if I was trying to reassure Maria or myself. It felt unnervingly real. I gathered myself up and splashed some cold water on my face. "I'll be back in a bit. I'm going to ask around about the best route to Rome." "I'm not sure the kids have rested enough to make that journey yet, Al. They're weak, and so am I." Frustrated, I turned to her and said gruffly, "Then you need to get ready, because we're leaving this place, and we're leaving today." I stormed out before she could reply and headed into the streets to find information. It didn't take too long to discover that there would be a group headed out in just a few hours. The trip would take 2 to 3 days, depending on the weather and how fast they were able to travel. I didn't care. I just wanted to be far away from this place, and I never wanted to set foot back in those ruins. The afternoon had come, and Maria and I loaded the kids onto a wagon. I had secured a ride on the back of one of the merchant's wagons. I paid him by loading the wagon for him, and agreed to unload it once we'd made it to our destination. That night, curled up next to the small fire I had built, I waited for everyone to fall asleep before I pulled out the satchel I had hidden under my layers. I flipped it open and pulled out the items I had taken from the ruins. Shame fell over me. I had never stolen anything in my life. But something had come over me last night when I saw all the beautiful things laid on the table under the big tent at the dig site. There were untold riches just sitting there. The jewelry was exquisitely crafted, and the dishes were unlike anything I'd ever seen. Their owners are long dead and gone. I didn't think anyone would miss them. I grabbed what I could hide under my cover and left before Juan noticed I had grabbed them. I wasn't proud of this, and I knew Maria would never approve of me stealing. I tucked it back into the satchel and out of sight. I planned to sell it as soon as we arrived in Rome to help until I found work. Rest didn't come. The moment I closed my eyes, he was there again. Those black eyes stared a hole through my soul. I woke by the ashes of our fire just before dawn, much like the morning before. Drenched in sweat and breathing wildly, the merchant whose cart we were riding in was already moving about, with a stoked fire and cooking up something that smelled. "You know, some say those ruins are cursed," the man said smoothly. "Many of men that enter that place leave with their minds a little off," he continued. "And the ones who take things from it find themselves no longer breathing." My gaze shot to his. Did he somehow know the shame I was hiding in my satchel? Surely not. Maybe he's just making conversation. Before I completely panicked and started confessing my sins to the man, I took a deep breath. "I've heard there is something off about the place," he continued. "Come sit by the fire. You can make yourself useful while they sleep," the man said to me in a cool tone. But I didn't argue. I sat up and helped him prepare the meal. He didn't say much, and I didn't offer much for conversation. It wasn't long before everyone had gathered around the fire and stuffed their faces. "There's a storm brewing. We've only a few hours to travel before it hits. It seldom snows in this area, but this winter has been unusually harsh, and I didn't have a good feeling about it." We found ourselves hunkered down in just a few short hours later, trying to stay warm and out of the hammering snow. It had become a full-on blizzard. You couldn't see much farther than a few feet. By the time night had fallen, the snow had relented, but the damage had been done. We were huddled by the fire trying to keep warm, and our bodies were exhausted from the shivering. I was almost afraid to close my eyes, knowing what I might find there in my dreams again, but I was too tired to fight it. I was right, though. When I closed my eyes, there he was waiting for me. Only this time, he wasn't alone. Next to the boy was Maria, on her knees, sobbing. But there were no tears, and her mouth wide, screaming, with no sound. I tried to reach her, but my body wouldn't move. I thrashed and jerked, but to no avail. I watched in horror, helplessly, as her body melted into a puddle next to the boy, and there was nothing I could do. I begged to wake from this nightmare, but it only worsened. Next, my eldest son appeared next to the boy, his eyes red from the tears that didn't exist in the hellish landscape. He too became nothing more than a molten puddle on the ground, next to the boy, made from the ashes. One after the other, the same scene played out in my nightmare, until the youngest of our six children appeared. He was but a babe, no fear in his eyes. Only he was yanked from my nightmare, and I found myself tumbling back into reality. I opened my eyes and saw the merchant that we'd been traveling with staring me dead in the face. It took longer than it should have for me to realize I was standing and no longer asleep. There was a cold burn in me that I couldn't quite describe. I found myself unable to move my body like I had just hours ago. The man standing face to face with me, taking a step back and looking down, I followed his gaze to my chest. That was what was causing the unfamiliar cold, sharp pain. There was a sword sticking out of my chest. My eyes jerked back to the man's face, and I noticed he was holding my youngest son. "What have you done?" I asked, so quiet I didn't think he heard me. He said quietly, "I had to stop you. You killed them all." I knew I was dying. I could feel the blood from my chest had soaked through my clothes and was trickling into my shoes. I followed his gaze once more to the fire we had been sleeping around. My knees buckled and I hit the ground. I hadn't noticed until that moment the smell, the burning smell. And there around the fire lay my family, all dead and burning. Thank you for joining us on our journey to Pompeii. Tune in next week as we discuss another terrific location. I'm Carmen Carrion. Remember, you can send me suggestions and stories of haunted places to my email, carmencarrion@gmail.com, or follow me on Twitter @CarmenCarrion. Go to eeriecast.com to find other terrifying podcasts, such as Freaky Folklore, hosted by me, Carmen Carrion. Until next time, stay safe out there, until I see you at our next destination.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.